From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for October 18th, 2019. Checking the calendar, Sir Elton John is at the Forum this Saturday night. And for something completely different, in Union Grove this weekend, it's the Great Pumpkin Chuckin' Fest. That could be fun. Sunday, the Packers host the Raiders at Lambeau. And Thursday night, in Houston, the Bucks start playing for real as the NBA season gets underway. Who doesn't like a good massage? Well, I don't like this one. For $80, a massage parlor in Israel will dump non-venomous snakes on your face and naked body and let them slither around for an hour. And I thought goat yoga was weird. Well, here's just a bunch of strange headlines from around the planet this week. China has banned the cartoon South Park because they made fun of Chinese censorship. A Florida man, of course this is in Florida, was arrested for trying to get an alligator drunk. I don't know why. And finally, Scotland has awarded a $250,000 grant to scientists to breed sheep that are less flatulent. Now for a clumsy segue. In the studio today we have Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Had a couple of nickels this week. NASDAQ up 0.4%, climbing 33 points to close at 8,090. S&P 500 up 0.5% this week, climbing 16 points to close at 2,986. Broader markets up an impressive 21% this year. Dow Jones Industrial Average just shed 0.2%, losing 46 points. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 26,771. Big action occurred on Tuesday. Dow was up 237 points. We lost about that much today with the market sell-off. You know, trading started on Monday, kind of thin, bank holiday, so some of the players were out. Trading volume was really low. We made some progress on the trade war late last week with the market going up quite a bit a week ago today. Market shed 22 points on Wednesday, up 23 points on Thursday, only to see the sell-off today. You know, Joel, I'm going to just start right off with you. Probably one of the bigger reports this week came from the Commerce Department on Tuesday. They reported the retail sales were down this past month from the month before. Kind of got a lot of people's attention. You look at the numbers, pretty hard to put a positive spin on it. And Joel, of course, the concern is consumer spending over two-thirds of our economy. Everybody's been talking about unemployment being at a 50-year low, that wages are finally climbing, so consumer spending would hang in there, only to see that, you know, people are getting somewhat tentative on shopping. So not good news.
That's right, Bob. And as you point out, that, you know, that's the dog that wags the tail for our economy. And the thing that the Fed has been pointing out is that, I mean, that's, they see consumer spending as one of the bright spots in the economy. So here we have retail sales, a really good measure of consumers actually spending. And it was down for the second time in, I guess it was the first decline, I'm sorry, in 7 months. And seven out of the 13 retail categories declined, including automotive, which is a big one, building centers, which, you know, is an indication of people buying houses or remodeling and things like that. I did see a little glimmer of hope, and that's restaurants and bars. People were still spending there. And that's the sort of thing where you figure if people aren't feeling real confident about, you know, that they're going to have a job next week or that they're going to not get a raise, that they're going to cut back a little bit in that stuff. And so that's still going pretty strong. But otherwise, yeah, the retail sales weren't a good indicator this week.
Dave, as you know, earnings season has begun in earnest. Corporations across the country reporting their results for the third quarter. tenth of the companies in the S&P have reported so far. The vast majority are coming in higher than what the analysts had expected. That's the good news. The bad news is earnings, as you know, are expected to go down almost 5%, so that'd be the third quarter in a row of negative earnings. There's a sliver of hope here, according to FactSet, earnings are going to turn positive early next year and wind up the year with a pretty good increase of maybe 10%.
Now, that would be certainly, I think, good news, Bob, because we've certainly seen numbers across the board here over the last several months being walked back, and that's unfortunately probably why we've seen such a high percentage of the beats this week, with about, like you mentioned, I think they said 80% of the people reporting this week had exceeded expectations, and I think there's a little bit more of lowering the bar ahead of time on that kind of thing, but still beats the heck out of people missing them, for sure. And of course, we had a couple of, you know, real laggards this week, Boeing and Johnson & Johnson, due to things that are not necessarily economically related as much as it is kind of one-off. So that was a big drag on the Dow today. But we certainly would welcome those FactSet numbers to come in anywhere near those kinds of projections for growth for next year, because I think, you know, through all of the other things that we've seen this year with the geopolitical concerns, it would be nice to see us kind of move through and bring in those increases.
Paige, we saw problems in the manufacturing sector of the economy buried in the industrial production numbers, that manufacturing actually fell 0.5% this last month in a continuation of their problems. And perhaps it's spilling over into retail, pretty hard to say.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern, I think, going forward. So, you know, as we've said on this podcast in the past, when the Federal Reserve starts lowering interest rates, some of the first industries to see that are going to be in those industrials and manufacturing. So it is a little bit troublesome that as the Federal Reserve, you know, has changed course this year and started decreasing those rates, that we're not seeing that actually have a positive impact in those manufacturing sectors.
You know, Paige, speaking of manufacturing, certainly this applies to the U.S. multinationals. You know, the dollar is now the strongest it's been in a couple of years, and that hurts manufacturers. It hurts overseas countries that have dollar-denominated debt. But with multinationals, when they have to bring back their foreign earnings to the U.S. soil, repatriate their earnings, as they say, the stronger dollar hurts them. So I think that's in part behind the pretty impressive performance of value stocks as opposed to some of the growth stocks, that particularly the tech stocks that have a huge portion of their earnings come from overseas.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, so far in this earnings season, it's just about 16 of, I think it's around 40 of the companies that have reported so far, have cited the strong dollar as being a negative impact on themselves going forward. So those big multinationals, you know, technology companies, consumer discretionary, as those ones start to come out, you know, I'd expect to see them citing the dollar more and more. But the hope is that those companies that are, you know, dollar denominated, centered here in the United States, will continue to sort of pick up and keep our economy going.
You know, the example that I always use is We Energies doesn't care about what's going on in China. That, not necessarily endorsing We Energies here, folks. But you look at the value funds, you know, a lot of them hold regional banks isolated from Asia. A lot of them own regional insurers. A lot of them own healthcare companies that are, again, somewhat isolated from Asia. So you get the sense that if the global economy really is slowing, you know, maybe we're better off staying domestic in our orientation, certainly favoring value. You know, Dave, for years now, we've been talking on this podcast about how inflation is barely measurable. It is all about earnings and interest rates, in my opinion, for stock prices. And, of course, interest rates are partially driven by our expectations for inflation. So I thought it was interesting this week that the New York Fed came out and said that inflation expectations are the lowest since they began keeping records. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's remarkable, actually. And you know, even when you look at some of the things that have been happening around the world, I mean, when we saw the unrest go on in Saudi Arabia recently with the bombing of their oil fields, you certainly would have expected energy prices to take a beating on that with oil going through the roof, but it didn't happen. A lot of that has to do with our energy independence here in the U.S. with due to fracking. But you look across the board at those types of things, raw materials, with China slowing, it's difficult to foresee any type of inflationary pressure on that front. And as you know, the other areas that we see inflation start to percolate is going to be in costs of labor with wages going up. That's been the one area we've seen a little bit of pressure. But the other one comes from capacity. And we've seen now this week, we see capacity utilization numbers actually going down. So we're taking even a little bit more of that inflationary pressure off the table. So yeah, it's pretty hard to come up with a scenario where we see a significant pressure on upward inflation at this point.
You know, I think it's so very important when you invest your money for the long term to force yourself to think long term. This is the perfect environment for this. When you think of earnings, the earnings are negative for three quarters in a row. We haven't seen that for 4 years. And yet the stock market is within just a few percentage points of its all-time high. And, you know, people are always asking me, how is that? That earnings are basically flat for the entire year, and yet stocks are up over 20%. Well, the simple reason is smart people are looking at the next year and the year after, and they're liking what they're seeing. They're seeing a backdrop of fairly low interest rates. You're looking at a backdrop of okay consumer spending and double-digit earnings growth potentially here for the next couple of years. So the stock market is a forward pricing mechanism. It's always important to remember that it's not pricing what they think of the world today or tomorrow. You know, smart money is looking into next year, even the year after, to get a sense of where we're going to be, and they're liking what they're seeing. So it is earnings driven, but not this year's earnings. It's kind of like a looking into the future. Now, here's the hard part. We started this year with the analysts thinking their earnings would be up 10% this year. So they scaled back their estimates all year long as the trade war intensified and really reduced economic activity around the world. This week, the International Monetary Fund said that global economy appears to be the weakest since the financial crisis. Right? Look at the United States. We started the first quarter of this year with GDP at 3%. Second quarter, we hit 2%. We're maybe going to be 1.4% for the third quarter. So you get the concept. We're heading down 3, then 2, then 1.4. So we say this estimate of corporate earnings for next year, you know, with the necessary caveat and disclaimer, assuming that the global trade war doesn't intensify. Because if it does intensify, my guess is we won't see earnings anywhere near 10%. For next year. And that was the same thing that applied to the estimate for this calendar year. But the trade wars did, in fact, intensify. So I'm fairly upbeat. I think we'll have positive earnings for next year. And you don't need to wait forever, folks. According to FactSet, they think we'll start turning positive in the first quarter of next year. So that's somewhat encouraging.
And, Bob, I think that part of that, your point, is also, I think, manifest in the fact that the smart money is also anticipating that some of this, the geopolitical distress that is kind of adding to some of this uncertainty is going to dissipate over the next couple of years. So, you know, you'd hope that there's something's going to happen with the Brexit, something will happen with trade. You know, maybe we can get some things, you know, done in the Middle East with some of the concerns in Saudi Arabia and Turkey. And some of that stuff starts to dissipate, and that also frees up some of that, you know, capital that's being put on hold right now.
And Dave, you know, meantime, getting back to how we started, I mean, consumers are still spending. The spending might be down in retail sales. You know, we're maybe seeing some signs where there's a little less confidence from consumers, but the economy is still growing, and we've got that going for us.
Joel, let's talk about a few of these other reports that caught my attention. Index of leading indicators.
Bob, that was brought down actually by manufacturing. That was one of the reasons that the conference board today said that their latest gauge of those leading indicators is actually going down, and that's the second month in a row that it's going down. They're seeing that as a sign that, as I just said, I mean, the economy is still growing, but it's not growing great guns. It's a slow growth, and they're anticipating that's going to keep going into 2020.
Industrial production, that fell a little bit more than they thought.
That's right. And that's, you know, that's interesting because that's one of the hard numbers that we have on manufacturing. We tend to look at hard numbers that the Federal Reserve puts out and that the Commerce Department puts out on things like durable goods orders. And those have actually been brighter spots as far as, you know, what's going on in manufacturing lately. The softer numbers are the Institute for Supply Management, where they're actually interviewing purchasing managers. And those have been less optimistic. But now here we have those industrial production numbers. And again, those are down the second time in 3 months. And it's not looking so good. But that was also influenced by a one-time factor where the strike that's going on against General Motors right now, that was cutting back some of the auto production. So that really affected the number of cars that were being put out across the country, and that affected the industrial production numbers.
Dave, as you know, the Federal Reserve Board Open Market Policy Committee is going to meet in a couple of weeks. Odds are favoring a rate cut. This will be the third. They lowered for the first time the end of July, then the middle of September. I think it's important for investors to remember that it takes almost a year for the effects of lower interest rates to be felt in the system. So I bring this up by way of introducing the concept and to say that you got to be patient. And when you look at those earnings estimates again for next year, you have to view them through the lens of a favorable interest rate environment, that rates are heading down, and it takes a while, folks, for the effects to be kicking in and to be able to measure, as Joel is talking. And so my point simply is that we'll then have three rate cuts in a fairly short period of time, that we should start seeing the benefits of that next spring into next summer.
Yeah, Bob, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what those impacts are. And, you know, it was a pretty abrupt turnaround here from the fact that we spent so long accommodating the economy with low interest rates and a decline. And then as we began to tighten over the last couple of years, how quickly we've now gone back down to the accommodative stance. Interesting article in the Wall Street Journal today talking about how some of the options traders have bets out there right now on negative interest rates in the U.S. for the first time. Not sure that will get to that point, but the fact that we're even having that conversation is quite fascinating when you look at it. Still trillions of dollars of negative yielding debt around the world internationally, kind of keeping a lid on treasury rates here in the U.S. So whether they get to those negative levels or not, we're certainly in place for some low rates for a long time.
I think history will show that negative rates don't help. I mean, consider $17 trillion now of negative yielding debt outstanding, primarily in Europe and Asia. And both of those economies are sluggish. I think it's counterintuitive to think that negative rates would help. Early on in an economic cycle, rates help. But if you think about this, anybody that wanted to borrow money did it by now. You've had plenty of opportunities to borrow money. Money was this cheap 3 years ago. So just getting back to cheap money doesn't necessarily provide the incentive for people to rush in and borrow. So I think the government will eventually realize that there are structural impediments that are reducing economic growth. As I tried to make real clear at the seminar, and for folks that missed it, go to the website. We've got the entire seminar online where Paige, you presented, Dave, you presented, Kyle did, and I did. But I talked about that there's only two components to GDP, only two. And it's important that everybody know this, right? So the first component is the increase in the workforce. So back when I got out of high school, we went from a third of the women working outside the house to two-thirds within a very short period of time. So we had a huge influx in the workforce, and sure enough, GDP was in the 3.5-4% range for a number of years. And then in the 90s, here comes the second component, productivity. Right? So how many more pens can you make in an hour? Right? So when all of us got fax machines and email at our workplaces, productivity climbed as you would expect it. Here's the bad side of the story. That peaked out over 20 years ago. So productivity has been limping along at a very anemic rate at about 1.5%. So here's the punchline. The pros think that the workforce is only going to increase 0.2% per year the next 10 years. And with productivity stuck at roughly 1.5%, add the two together, folks, and you're looking at GDP of roughly 1.7%. So it's about where we are now. Still a positive number. It's not going negative. But you got to do two things. You have to focus on growing the workforce, and either we open up the borders or convince women to have way more kids. And number two, educate the workforce to make them more productive. So we talk about interest rates as a way to turn the economy around. There's limited effectiveness at that point in time, at this point in time, afford lower rates. Anybody who's going to borrow money did already. So if you look at the structural impediments that are really holding the economy back, it's we're running out of workers, workforce is barely going to grow, and we need to retrain everybody and teach them properly so that productivity can climb. Those structural impediments are going to be really important to address over the next few years if we expect nice growth coming up this next decade. Folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.